Hey everyone, before we start the show, we just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. We literally couldn't do the show without you. For just $5 a month, you get early access to all our episodes and access to Patreon exclusive releases, such as the Call of Cthulhu modern day scenario, The Space Between, our Cult Divinity Lost scenario, which has its fantastic finale this week, and our upcoming playthrough of Amid the Ancient Trees. So if that sounds good to you, then please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/HowieRollPodcast. Now, on with the show. Hello and welcome back to How a Roll Podcast Does Pop Cthulhu. We are returning with Two-Headed Serpent and I believe we are about to start the next chapter, which, although it hasn't been mentioned in the podcast so far, I think it is Oklahoma. So I'm really, really excited by this. It was written by Paul Fricker. Am I right, Scott?
You are.
And I know that he has a reputation of writing some absolutely fantastic scenarios, so I'm very, very excited for this. So let's get into some introductions. We may do a quick recap and then we're going to get on with the show. So as I said before, or may not have said before, my name is Joe Trier and I'll be playing Charles Blackstone, who is, if I'm being honest, he is not really happy with the way his character arc is progressing through this story and is gradually falling apart. He definitely distrusts Caduceus, Bart particularly, and things are not going so well for Charles, so let's see how this progresses. Curran, welcome back to the show. How are you, and how is Ethan feeling in this particular scene?
I'm doing good, and Ethan has a mind like a wet paper towel. Everything you try and apply to it simply tears it apart, so little bit by little bit I'm losing my mind. Although I gained some sanity last session, but I think he's excited to actually go forward and learn more about this, like the underbelly of Caduceus. He's super intrigued, and he's also he's both torn by being like complete. He's almost torn by the fact that he loves that he's got scales, but is also terrified because he's got scales. So he's sort of ignoring the fact that he has scales, but every time someone mentions it, he'll brush it off like it's cool.
Is it a sort of almost a case of he's spent his entire life hunting the greatest predators in the world and is now becoming one, and is very he's kind of pleased by this?
Yeah, it was. I've got this obsession with reptiles, and so. The character's not in the best place, kind of torn between loving it and hating it, and is terrified, but is also excited for us to move forward and see what's going on in Oklahoma.
That's very cool. I want to see how that progresses. Welcome back to the show, Dave. How are you? And how's Bart? How's he doing after the revelations of the last scene?
I'm doing all right. Bart is intrigued. Honestly, wish he could get a little bit more time with Tirinish to figure out where she stands in all this. But other than that, see how things progress. Play along.
Nice. Okay. And welcome.
Charles is a dick.
That'll get edited out.
Well, that has to be kept in because it's funny.
Joe is a dick.
Welcome back to the show, Aaron. Really pleased to have you playing again. Obviously, hey, Spencer is only just rejoined the show, and there's been a few revelations that he's kind of learned about Caduceus and sort of about the rest of the party. How's he doing, and how's he feeling about how we left the story in the last episode?
He is just dreading any further involvement in Caduceus and anything they put him to. Some things that have been said by Bart have kind of like almost blown his mind to hear them, and it seems absurd to anyone else. This would be the ramblings of a crazy man, but I've been through a lot of shit with Bart, so I trust him, and I can fully believe the crazy things that come from his mouth. Also very, very excited to hear a new lead I have on the Rose situation. And I want to inquire that line more, but we'll see how it goes.
Nice. Oh, that's a fantastic insight into Spencer. I'm really looking forward to having him back in the party. And welcome back, Camille. Now, I'm not going to ask you how Jane's feeling, but maybe, because obviously we don't know enough about the character, and I think that would be good to come out and play, but how is she outwardly looking in terms of, like, how is she displaying her feelings?
I think Jane at the moment is looking very bemused and quite intrigued by the situation. She feels like she's watching a very subtle tennis match and isn't quite sure who to look at when and what's quite happening. So she's trying to kind of drink it all in at the moment. So that's how I would mainly describe it. She's being quite quiet and quite measured because she's not quite sure how she fits.
Nice.
At the moment, or what tact to take.
And it's probably worth saying at the moment, the other four are a bit too mixed up in their own stuff right now to really be looking too carefully at this new character.
So I'm always studying them in a way.
Yes. That's a good point that, yeah, I don't think you need to make a psychology role at this stage, but you can certainly tell, I think, how broken all of them are in their own way by their experiences with Caduceus so far.
Yeah, I literally wrote in my notes just now, party broken down.
Yes.
Trust? ?
Yes, I mean, if you want to delve into more details at any stage, we can certainly go for psychology roles. But I think at the moment, everything's pretty well on the surface.
And before we jump back into the episode, thank you again, Scott, for joining us. I won't ask you how you're feeling because I can see your face right now.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you very much, Joe. Yes. This is, I think, moving along quite nicely. I'm really glad that we've got the band back together now. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where all this goes because, well, if there is a chapter in this campaign that is designed to show the fault lines potentially in the party, you're about to play it.
Brilliant. Scott, do you want to do any kind of recap or do you want to jump straight back in?
Well, I'll do a very brief recap. So last session, yes, we got the returning party members back together. Spencer reached out to Bart and managed to make contact, and they all agreed to meet up at the Meadham building. And once they were there, before they had a chance to speak and get up to date with each other, they were introduced to their new party member, Jane Farewell. And Gonsalves basically passed Jane over to their care and said, you know, bring her up to speed. And she has found herself in this impromptu meeting in a filing room where basically everyone seems to be breaking down around her. So, welcome to Caduceus.
But I'm not breaking down. I'm as sane as I ever have.
Yes, and that's the problem.
The problem isn't that I have a head towards insanity. It's that I'm just perhaps evil.
Okay, so you spent a fair bit of time in your impromptu meeting room, in the filing room, and it is really coming around to time for your briefing, so unless you want to be late for it, you probably better head off to the meeting room.
So as people are sort of trailing out, Charles is lagging behind a bit, and he just calls out and goes, "Hey, Ethan, could I just borrow your knife for a second?"
Yeah, of course.
Thanks. And he sort of he takes what I imagine is sort of a Crocodile Dundee Bowie knife.
It's this big, yeah. It's
like, call this a knife. Yeah,
it's a line, isn't it?
A spoon.
and Charles just turns around and he'll turn his back to Ethan and he's going to run the knife across his palm quite deeply.
Okay. Yeah, well, you can take one hit point of damage for that. And yeah, there is quite a lot of blood. What the hell are you doing? Yeah, but I mean, you can see just the splashes of blood on the ground, blood splashing off Charles's shoes. Your hand is really hurting now. It's going to be really difficult to use in your hand for a little while because, you know, you've got a gaping wound across there.
Charles just lets the knife sort of drop from his fingers, and he sort of stares at the wound in his sort of shaking palm, and he's looking at it, and he's looking for any sign of scales. And he sort of pulls the wound apart for a moment, and does he see anything?
There is a lot of blood in there. There's a lot of flesh. There's, you know, peeled back skin. You've just managed to avoid slashing into any of the tendons, so there's that. But no scales.
So he sort of grabs a dirty handkerchief from his pocket and wraps it up and picks up the knife and hands it back to Ethan and goes, let's go.
Look, Charles, I should tell you that when I started getting scales, my skin didn't feel like my own. And if that hurts, then you're all right.
Yes.
You're okay.
That's good to know, Ethan. Thank you. Thank you for that.
All right. Now stop cutting yourself. Let's go. Yes.
So Charles sort of, he's looking like he's made a decision, and he's standing a bit more upright as he follows the others back into the bullpen.
Okay. So the others have already started arriving in the meeting room. You're not the first people there. Sitting in one of the chairs on the far side of the conference table is Canning. So for the sake of Jane, who hasn't encountered Canning before, he is the biggest person you have ever seen. He's sitting down. The chair that he's sitting on is creaking and is dwarfed by his body. And even sitting down, he is taller than you are, by some measure. He is absolutely hairless. His head is smooth. He's got no brows or eyelashes. And he is just... He's dressed in a very smart suit. And he is just staring silently with... not really anger, but certainly with a cool, I could break you all without even trying, glint in his eyes as you all come into the room.
Oh. Jane is slightly taken aback, but kind of regains her composure quite quickly and just sort of takes it in her stride.
Bart just sort of nods and, hello, gorgeous.
Yes, he does not react to that.
So he looks exactly like Kingpin from Into the Spider-Verse?
He's thinner than that. I mean, he's more muscular than the fat. There's no fat on him. He just seems to be a block of muscle about 8 feet tall.
But I think, yeah, when I watched the film, I was like, I don't know if he's fat or muscle. He's just a unit.
Yes.
He is the horizon.
Who else did you say was in the room? Did you say Gonzalez was there?
No, at the moment it's just Canning sitting in the room.
So Charles will come in last, and he will slam the door much harder than necessary, and look around and go, let's just get on with this. Where are we going? Canning, what's going on? What do you want us for?
He just looks at you. And the door opens behind you, and you see a woman come in carrying a bunch of binders. Certainly Bart has met her before, and so has Spencer. This is the woman who hired Spencer. You recognize her as Dolores Parville. She's a woman in sort of late middle age, dressed in a very smart suit of work clothes, her hair, graying hair, tied back in a bun, wearing glasses. And she comes in and gives you all a modest smile and just starts placing these little binders down on the table at every position. And she smiles and says, yes, Mr. Meadham will be along in a moment. And she turns and heads out. Gonsalves comes in at this stage, and he's actually looking fairly unhappy, and just walks over silently, you know, acknowledges you, and sits over somewhere just to the side of Canning.
Charles will start, he was still sort of standing, pick up one of the binders and start flicking through it.
Yeah, Gonsalves says, let's wait until Mr. Meadham has given us his briefing. This is additional information. And yeah, I mean, you haven't seen Gonsalves like this before. You've, I mean, he's always been It was sort of fairly bright and breezy, you know, but professional. But, you know, there seems to be something quite downcast about him this time.
Psychology roll?
Yeah.
Nope.
27 versus 10.
Yes, if anyone else wants to make a psychology roll, they are more than welcome to.
I'll give it a go.
I will give it a try. Boom, 83 against 10, so that's a no.
86 versus 70.
So Charles is sort of looking at, because obviously Gonzalez has just spoken to him, so he has actually passed. He got 34 versus 37.
Okay. So, yeah, he certainly has changed in temperament even in the last, you know, 45 minutes or however long it's been since you spoke to him. He looks like he's, I don't know, maybe he received some bad news, or certainly he very much looks like something is troubling him.
So, like, Charles is just staring at Gonzalez, and he goes, "Hey, Doctor, what's wrong? What's happened?"
No, everything is fine, he says. And you realize as he says that Canning is just staring at him. And, you know, he's not meeting Canning's eyes, he just looks down. And at that stage, another man walks into the meeting room. And, you know, for those of you who've met him before, which is a few of you, this is Joshua Meadham. He looks like he's probably in his 70s. He's got fairly neat grey hair and a big bushy grey beard, dressed in a very nice tweed suit, carrying a walking stick.
I'm going to take this opportunity to casually whisper to Spencer Randall, whatever that means, and I'm going to say, "This is the guy."
Gonsalves says, for those of you who haven't met him, this is Mr. Meadham. He's come down to brief us himself today.
Just as an aside, is this the guy on the cover of the Two-Headed Serpent book, top left?
Yes.
And
yes,
is Canning the guy below him?
Yes, he is.
And then is Gonsalves bottom right?
Yes.
Awesome. I can guess at the other ones, but not without doing serious metering. Oh, is Tyrannish top right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, in fact, I think you've met all but one of them. But anyway. So Joshua Meadham comes in, smiles at all of you, or at least gives you a little nod, and says, gentlemen, madam, yes, I know this is unorthodox, but I thought I'd come down here and talk to you myself about this, because this is a mission that I'd like to entrust you all with, that I have a great personal interest in. Thank you very much to Dr. Gonsalves for bringing this matter to my attention, and obviously we need to look into this at once. There has been something happening in a small town called Bingham in Oklahoma. It's... I must admit I'd never heard of the place before. It doesn't seem to be much of anything, but there is a preacher there who has been putting out broadcasts from a radio station in Oklahoma City. Dr. Gonsalves has recordings, he can play them to you later, that we find troubling, that they seem to indicate that he is forming some kind of cult of Yig out there. And, well, I mean, this may be nothing to worry about, or this may be the start of something more sinister. At the very least, it warrants some investigation, but I think, yes, I don't know. I'm troubled by this. I'm troubled. I don't like this. I think whatever's happening there, it is probably some kind of perversion or corruption of... Well, he looks around meaningfully at Bart, Charles, and Ethan, and says, what is right? And if this is the case, you must deal with it. We cannot countenance any blasphemy.
At this point, Bart is internally, at least, somewhat disturbed at the very the echoes of his Orthodox upbringing coming up in another situation. The echoes of quasi Christian, you know, types of comments he would be more familiar coming up from Christians as opposed to open minded occultists.
So Charles kind of looks up and goes, "And this is a bad thing for Caduceus?"
As I said, we do not know what his teachings are. We don't know whether he is actually speaking for the Father of Serpents. We don't know where all of this is coming from. This could be some disinformation campaign by the Inner Knight. They could be some attempt to corrupt, to blaspheme. I am very suspicious of this. This is not right. I think I would like you to deal with this firmly.
Deal with it well.
Firmly? So, like, I bring my gun?
Well,
I'll bring one too. I'm a dab hand.
Good. Well, find out what's going on there first, but if it is as we fear, then do not be afraid to deal with it.
Bart just holds up a finger and's like, how are we certain that these aren't just generic snake-handling Oklahoma nut jobs?
Well, as I said, Dr. Gonsalves will provide you with the evidence that we've gathered, but there is more to the preacher's radio broadcast than there seems at first.
Yes, I shall review the records.
Hang on, I've been a little bit out of the loop. Isn't Oklahoma just like a mess right now? Isn't it a fucking dust bowl or something?
Yes. Meadham looks a bit cross at your profanity, but he gathers himself. And he says, yes, there are certain tribulations that the people there are undergoing, but this is unimportant to us.
Bart looks over at Charles and just says, poverty breeds fanaticism.
Yes, exactly.
Though I might mention here, we might need big guns. It's Oklahoma. Everybody and their dog has a gun down there.
Yes, well, take any weapons you see fit.
Excellent. Right, so where's the armory?
Gonsalves will arrange anything you need, he says.
Excellent. All right. Great meeting. We'll go deal with it and we'll report back.
Spencer is kind of like leaning up against the wall, looking with disdain at Jonas, is it? Sorry, what's his name?
Joshua Meadham.
Joshua, sorry.
Yeah. Jonas.
So he's kind of leaning at the wall, one foot on the wall as he's leaning back into his knee bent, looking up from under his hat. And so what's the fee for this one? Because I know it's going to be the same as the last job, if not more.
What are you implying? At this stage, yes, Canning has shifted in his seat, so he turns around and, you know, he's looking 100% at Spencer now. Spencer has his full, undivided attention. In fact, I think he may even try an intimidate role here. What's Spencer's intimidate?
45.
Okay, so That is an ordinary success. So, I mean, how you react to this is entirely up to you. What it does mean is that if he does any follow-up action, he'll get a bonus die on you because this is getting to you. But, yeah, there is something about canning in his eyes when he looks at you. I'm sure he is big. Sure, he looks like he could probably break you over his knee without even trying. But there is just something in his eyes for that moment that is pure 100% murder as he's staring at you.
Psychology roll?
Sure.
Yep.
Ooh,
I rolled a 5.
Yeah, I mean, that just confirms it for you that...
That's a critical success.
At this stage, yes, you do realize that if the only thing that is probably stopping Canning from killing you here and now is the fact that he's probably been ordered not to, but otherwise you'd probably be dead right now.
I meet him back with a stare that says that I don't give a shit. I've had enough of your shit.
Better lived through worse.
Yeah. You can try making an intimidate roll back at him. Because of the level of intimidate he's got, you need an extreme success.
Why not? Let's just have some shits and giggles, shall we?
Ooh,
53. That's probably not going to cut it.
There is so much testosterone in this room, guys. Can we just watch it?
So I think, for all Spencer's efforts, he tries to meet Canning's gaze and he tries to give as good as he gets. But your resolve breaks first and involuntarily, no matter how much you don't want to, you just find yourself staring back down at the carpet again, at that dark spot that just seems to be spreading down there.
Hmm. Spencer, if it makes you feel any better, I'm equally scared of you and Canning. Your masculinity is saved. All right, can we continue?
Like, Spencer fully pissed off at this point, like visually annoyed.
Trying to be serious, but I want to make cracks about how roast Bart is right now.
Yes, Joshua Meadham says, well, if there's nothing else, then I shall leave you to Dr. Gonsalves. Any final questions before I go?
I just shake my head.
Are there any local support teams or contacts that might be of use?
No, you'll be on your own.
How we get in there?
That's up to you. I understand there's a good train service.
So, hang on, we're paying out of our own pockets to even get there?
No, we will provide you with tickets if that is how you choose to travel.
Okay. At least that's something.
I think we should use Charles's piloting skills because, you know, when else are we going to get a chance?
I glare at Ethan.
That's a damn good idea. That is a damn good idea. And Charles, like, sits up for the first time. Right, I reckon I can get us a plane. Gonsalves, you going to help me? Quickest way there, we'll be there in no time at all.
Quickest ways as the crow flies, right?
Yes, Gonsalves says yes. If you want to arrange to charter an aircraft, I can help you with expenses.
Let's talk expenses. Let's see what we can get. And Charles sort of puts his arm around Gonsalves and sort of leads him out the room.
He's got a bandage in one hand, right?
Yes. Yeah, leaves a bloody handprint on his.
Still smelling of whiskey.
I just lean over to the other people at the table and I'm like, does he ever stop drinking before flying?
This is new. Charles has not really been drinking. So, I mean, I don't know if anyone's passed that on in character, but
well,
sorry.
No, I'm not going to pass that on in character.
Let's put it this way, Jane. It's certainly not going to hurt his flying.
Oh, gosh.
Jane, I would put it like this. Charles flies similarly to how Spencer drives. So,
with full competence, I'm assuming.
I resent that remark.
Just bring a parachute. It's fine.
Is anyone actually going to tell Jane what happened the last time Charles flew you?
No, we're not. We're not going to do that.
Charles Roy rolled an extreme success and saved everybody's lives and did a landing maneuver which no other pilot in the world probably could have done.
It's a landing maneuver that wouldn't have been necessary had we had a better pilot.
I thought the pilot was Johnson.
Johnson was the pilot. Private. Charles performed heroically here.
He did, actually.
Well, okay. So then Joshua Meadham, if no one else is asking any more questions, leaves, and Canning gets up and follows him out, having to duck to get through the doorway, filling it up on the way out. He has to move out sideways.
Oh, no, I've missed my opportunity. I was going to ask, what do you feed Canning to make him think?
So we've got the binders in front of us.
Yes. Yeah.
Do we have the recordings?
Gonsalves says, yes, if you come through to my office, I'll play you the recordings. Okay. Well, Gonsalves' office is just on the other side of the bullpen, so it takes you seconds to get there. And, yeah, there is a gramophone that's been set up on his desk, and there's a wax record sitting on it already. And he says, yes, this... Well, you'll have to listen carefully. And he starts it up. It's an electric gramophone. And places the needle on. And almost immediately you hear, after the crackling, the sound of... he started it partway through, and it's jumped into what sounds like the middle of a sermon. And you hear a man's voice saying, "And the Lord God said unto the serpent, because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle, and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. This is the word of the Lord."
Amen.
Hallelujah.
Well, I'm all about the snakes, people, so it's, yeah. It just slips out of Ethan's mouth. Hey, amen. What? Wait, sorry.
Well, Gonsalves is saying, though, but can you hear it? Can you hear it? I mean, at this stage, you can all make listen rolls if you'd like.
Hear what? What are you talking about?
I forgot about listen as a skill. Try that. No. 83 against 20.
61 versus 20.
Oh, 43 against 40.
Is it possible 20... for me to roll for throw instead?
21 against 20.
Spend one luck.
This is the bit where I admit I'm not quite sure how to do occupation skills.
Okay, so...
Because it's one of my occupation skills, but I'm not... I've been trying to read into it how to allocate.
Oh, I see. Ah, okay. So, have you put any points into listen or...
Not as of yet, but it is one of my occupation skills.
Okay.
So I was just wondering how you delegate the points for occupation skills.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry, I should have gone over your character sheet before this.
It's
so,
okay, don't worry.
Have you put any points in any of your occupation skills yet?
Not yet, no.
Oh, shit. Okay, right. Well, we'll sort that out afterwards, because this will probably be the only role you have to make this session.
I was thinking if it's roleplay heavy, it's probably going to be okay, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to fix this before the next session. But then, I mean, if you roll against the base 20 for the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I rolled a 73 anyway, so just okay. Nah. I think.
So, were either Bart or Spencer spending luck to turn their near misses into successes?
I don't think so, at least for me. I assume he's going to explain what we're supposed to be hearing in a second, so I'll save the luck.
Yeah, I've got too little luck to frivolously spend it.
Isn't it one luck you have to spend, Bart?
Yeah.
This is the reason I'm still alive. After 5 years of play.
You say that like everyone else is dead, but I mean... Spencer's
no, not
right
just
there.
This campaign. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he looks around at the group of you expectantly and seems really quite disappointed. You can't hear that.
Hear what, Gonsalves? What are you talking about?
There's something underneath the recording. There's another voice, or at least another recording underneath it all. You can, it's much quieter, but it's in the cowl.
Hang on, if we take the recording and play it backwards, do we get the sound of Satan telling us to kill people? And...
But you can't hear the Nikal in between all this, then.
Can I try again?
I mean, yeah, if you can find some way of pushing it. Yeah, perhaps, I don't know, you know, if you get down and put your head actually in the in the trumpet from the gramophone.
See, I only have 10% in the cowl anyway, so even if I could hear it, I wouldn't understand it, so I'm not pushing it.
I was going to say, it's better than me. I've only got 4, so not really. Perhaps you could just tell us what it's saying, or...
Well, it's... There's a lot of it, and honestly, the Nikal isn't very good. It's very broken, but it is a lot of prayers to Yig, and they are, yes, they are praising the Father of Serpents. They're calling upon his power. They are giving worship to him. So, yes.
The diction and the... enunciation, are they? Does it seem to be a human speaker?
It's very quiet, but it sounds like the same man who is speaking on this recording, the Reverend Cornfield.
And this went out on the radio?
Yes.
Why would he hire Nikal praising Yig on a radio show praising Yig? Or praising snakes, anyway. Like, I don't get it.
Yes, I can only guess at this. I don't know. I think it may be some call out. Maybe he is trying to spread the worship of Yig or gather the faithful to Bingham. I don't know. Maybe this is one of the things we need to find out there.
It seems like a message within a message, so that people who are in the know. But anyone else would just hear the biblical phrasing.
Maybe. I wonder whether there might be more to it than that. But yes, you need to find out.
Is there anything we know about this religion? Anything other than just this one priest? Like, it must have some sort of, you know, must have come from somewhere. This can't be the only guy in the world who knows about this certain religion. Is there any sort of texts?
The three of us are sharing some very
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He says, yes, obviously he's not the only devotee of Yig out there. You remember, perhaps from your original briefing packs, and he suddenly looks at Jane and says, oh, actually, no, sorry, you haven't been briefed. Right. Yes, Yig, the father of serpents, beloved of the serpent people, one of the original gods worshipped on primordial Mu before the fall of the serpent people, before the schism that drove them apart. That, yes, there are two main factions amongst the serpent people, two religious factions. They're those who worship the father of serpents, those who believe that they all came from him, they are of his flesh, and those who have turned to the darkness, those who worship Sathogua, they have been reborn recently as a sect that call themselves the Inner Night, who I've told you about before. And, yes, it is the worshippers of Yig who generally have been, well, working with humanity to try to defeat the forces of darkness, to try to stop the plans of the Inner Night, and... I suppose this is what's troubling me about this particular mission. I don't know. I don't know what you should do when you're there. Anyway, you'll understand better when you're there than I will.
I mean, surely you're not asking us to whack this guy.
No. I don't know. Look, you need to go out there. You need to find out what's happening. You can actually see tears welling up in Gonsalves' eyes at this stage.
I've just been cutting onions. Yeah.
Okay, is anyone very persuasive?
Psychology, Ro?
Yeah.
Yay! So that's a three. Let me add a little tick to my box.
Oh! I passed as well. No, I didn't. Never mind.
So for those of you who passed the psychology role, yeah, Gonsalves seems to be very deeply conflicted about this. Well, not just conflicted, he seems to be very upset at, you know, having to give you this mission. He very much doesn't seem to want to.
Hey,
I'm tempted to roll for brawl, but I don't know if we should jump the gun here. I'm trying to read the room.
Might just...
Wait, is Canning still there?
No.
Canning left.
Yeah, you're just in the office with, you know, it's the five of you and Dr. Gonsalves.
So Charles has already sort of,
I think we can,
spoken to Gonsalves a bit before when Canning gave him that look. And so Charles is sort of going to go, hey, Gonsalves, how about we just go on, see if we can book this plane, see if we can find somebody to take us there. And then Charles is going to try and push him a bit further about this now Canning's out of the room.
Gonsalves leaves the room with Charles to go over and talk to one of the admin people on the bullpen. And on the way says, yes, Mr. Blackstone, I do not like this mission. I don't know exactly what it is that Mr. Meadham wants out of this. I suspect... You heard him talk there of blasphemy. I know that he has very certain... he has very strong ideas about what the worship of Yig entails. And... I don't share that. I feel that if there is a sect of Yig that has grown up in Bingham, then they are probably like us, aren't they?
You probably know my feelings towards the whole situation that happened last night. I've been very clear. However, whether I'm on the fence or not, I need a few things clearing up. So Joshua Meadham, is he like high priest? How does he fit in? I know he's the head of Caduceus, but how does he fit in with Yig?
Yes, he is our high priest.
So his teachings, they're your teachings? Why does he hate this guy? Like, surely he should be welcoming them into the fold, or is this like a Protestant Catholic thing? Has this guy started nailing things to doors and pissing him off?
I don't know. I think it's either that or... Actually, this would be a good chance for you to make some kind of interpersonal skill roll.
Okay, I don't... Anyone I've got is fast talk. And I don't think I'm doing that.
I could try to charm him.
This is a side conversation that's just going on between Charles and Gonsalves at the moment. So, yeah, this isn't really fast talk. This is persuade, I think.
Okay, I'll give it a go. Versus 10%. I get a 95. So is that a fumble?
Not quite. Yeah,
or 96, one off a fumble.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend 85 luck here.
for a moment, it does look like Gonsalves is going to say something else. You can see him, yeah, in an unguarded moment, he is just about to say something else, and then he catches himself just in time. And he shakes his head. Anyway, Mr. Blackstone, let's arrange this airplane for you.
And Charles looks like he's going to maybe try and push Gonzalez a bit more and then sort of thinks better of it. Goes, yeah, yeah, let's get a plane. Yeah, let's do that. And Charles sort of again looks a bit more himself, sort of the first time probably in the last 24 hours. And I don't know enough about 1930s planes, but I want to get a good one.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the best one. Yes, I can't give you an exact make or model, but you can certainly get a propeller plane that will get you all the way out to Oklahoma.
Awesome. Experimental jet plane is what I'm looking for, really.
Some sort of fly plane.
Some kind of land speed record kind of jet with extra wings.
Yeah, it'll just be an ordinary prop plane, but it'll be big enough for all of you plus any equipment you take.
Hang on. When we get it, it's an ordinary prop plane. Can I do some modifications using my weird science?
It depends how much time you have.
You can spray paint the expendables on the side. Maybe some shark teeth on the front.
Well, let me just cut back to the others, though. So you've seen Gonsalves and Charles go out, and they've gone over, and they seem to be having a fairly intense conversation. The rest of you are there in Gonsalves's office, having just been told that with the record. What are you doing?
I'm finding the dynamite and the guns.
There aren't any in Gonsalves's office.
Not in his office, no, but I mean...
They mentioned the armory, I think is what he's getting at. Yes,
okay, yes, yeah, I mean, you can go and talk to the quartermaster. Go and talk
I'm going to go do that, okay. And we can just meta whatever. I got guns, I got toys.
Sure.
I'm going to peruse the briefing materials.
Okay, yes. So the briefing materials, the pack that you've been given, gives you a bit more information about, you know, the nature of the cult of Yig, the suspicions about what the Reverend Cornfield is disseminating, some transcripts of some of his sermons, and also of the subtext of the sermons, the translations of the Nakal bits. And because there's a lot there in both Nakal and English, if you spend some time studying this on your way out to Oklahoma, you can actually pick up a bit of Nakal from it.
Well, I guess I'll take it with me for the flight and continue perusing it in various downtime. I too shall follow to the armorer.
Okay. So basically, yes, you're all kitting up at this stage, arranging planes. Is there anything else you're doing before you actually get ready to head out to Oklahoma?
Can we get a motorbike that we put in the back of the plane?
That's such a good idea. Can we get multiple motorbikes with a sidecar?
Yeah!
Jane's also interested in getting kitted out with some good guns.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You can get any guns you want within reason. You can request some motorcycles. I guess if you're getting a large enough plane, you can put some motorcycles in the back.
We're going to land them mid-flight. Yeah.
Artillery?
Hang on, what year is this again?
Can we get dynamite?
This is 1933. You can certainly get dynamite, yes.
To be fair, I feel like we're going to do this and now you're going to have to roll for flying and then we're...
No, I need to do something so I get to roll for flying. So just flying there doesn't... I don't get to roll for flying. I've got to...
Oh, okay.
Do some cool
shit.
But
you used to make Aaron roll for driving every time he just wanted to go.
No, only
every time.
Only
I
when we were being pursued.
Oh, okay, right. I thought you were just being cruel.
So we are going to do a loop the loop if there's no one chasing us.
Watch this!
Everything falls out of the back of the aircraft.
Spontaneous combustion. It's like we are now on fire.
Including us.
Weapons-wise, I think it's like dynamite, pistols, motorbikes. We want to get like motorbikes as a weapon.
I kind of want to follow up more on what Ethan and Charles were saying about Rose... and where, like, what happened there, because that all went by very quickly, and it sounded crazy.
I'm going to say that you're saying that out loud, and I've heard you. I'm like, look, you just need to talk to Gonzalez. Dr. Gonzalez, he'll explain it to you.
Have Bart and Charles' antics in the cellar been communicated that anyone else knows about what happened, and...
I'm imagining everyone's been talking about it for a week.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly rumours that something unpleasant has happened in the cellars, but you get the impression that something unpleasant happens down there fairly regularly.
Yeah, it's not.
Jane's just like, wait, what happened in the cellars? What? What?
Nothing.
So what was the mission directive? Finds?
Investigate. Stop.
Okay.
But then stop it if it's what we think it is.
By any means necessary.
No, I mean sorry, I should have been clear on this. What was the directive of the mission that I received about Rose?
Oh, from your original brief when you were hired to find her, your original brief was to find out what had happened to Rose Meadham, that she had she disappeared a while back.
So as long as I give them the information, I don't have to like physically bring her in.
No, you were charged with finding her current location. Yeah, and yeah, it was purely an information gathering exercise.
Okay. So yeah, I might want to talk to them a little bit more about what they know. And
okay, so what are you collaring, Ethan or Bart or
so
Charles is nearby too.
Yeah, but Charles is busy talking to Dr. Gonsalves.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to turn to Bart in this instance and just pull him to one side in the room and basically ask him, "Hey, Bart, come over here a minute."
Yes, Spencer?
You mentioned Rose earlier. You've recently...
Well, there was a... how to put this? There was a creature malformed, insane, who claimed to be a Rose Meadham that we found, but we know it was just an experiment, and I'm afraid she ended rather badly.
Where was this?
In the one of the basement floors here.
What, in the Cadesius building?
Yes.
Do you know what level?
Do I?
Yeah, I think the others told you it was the lower basement.
Well, so Bart was there, so we sacrificed...
Oh, yes.
I know I was there. I don't remember.
It's like basement two, I think.
Right.
Subfloor?
I'm pretty sure Jane's just sitting in the corner of the room listening to you guys talking.
Yeah, I'm about to ask, like, am I privy to this, or is it kind of a way out of my earshot?
Yeah, it depends. Are you deliberately trying to hide this from Jane or not?
No, I'm sort of like just making inquiries to an investigation I've been hired to
Okay,
do.
I'm listening in then, because I'm intrigued.
So, okay, I start jotting a few things down in my notebook here, and as Bart starts talking.
I would be careful if you go down there, there's quite a few unpleasant things.
Thank you, Bart. Thank you very much for letting me know. This is most useful information.
I would say further that they're not particularly open about the things that go on down there. You might want to be somewhat surreptitious in your approach.
Gotcha. So basically, what I'm thinking about doing is going to find the secretary, name is...
Dolores Parville.
Dolores Parville.
Yeah.
Who originally hired me on this job to find Rose and just find information about her whereabouts.
Sure. I mean, there is an internal telephone directory for Cadesius and an internal switchboard, and you can certainly use one of the telephones here to be put through to Mrs. Parville if that's what you want.
Okay, yeah, so I go out back, I leave the room for a moment and head down the hall where I find a sort of internal phone hanging on the wall and I get through to the switchboard and ask for Pavel's office.
Yes. All right. And yeah, you're put through, and you know, the voice of the woman who you saw in the meeting room a few minutes ago answers and says, Joshua Meadham's office.
Miss Pavel, it's Randall Spencer.
Oh, yes. Mr. Randall.
I thought your name was Spencer Randall.
What did I say?
Randall Spencer.
Randall Spencer. Well, I suppose people will introduce themselves via their...
Randall. Spencer first. Randall.
Private eye, extraordinaire.
Aye, private, extraordinaire.
Anyway, she says, Mr. Randall, yes, is everything all right?
I think I may have some information on the Rose situation that you really? Hired me for.
Yes, please. I'll tell you what, come up to the 17th floor. I'll send a security guard down to escort you. Are you sure. In the bullpen at the moment?
I'm just outside down the hallway.
Right. I'll see you in a moment. And yes, true to her word, a few months later, a security guard comes out of the lift and escorts you up. Again, you know, he pulls out another set of keys, which he unlocks to get to the buttons to take you up to the 17th floor, and escorts you over to Mrs. Parville's desk. She's sitting there waiting and offers you a seat.
Thanks. I pull the seat up and sit down in front of her and kind of open my notepad.
So what information do you have?
Well, the information that I have is that Rose may not be actually too far from this building.
Really?
In fact, I have it on good information that she's still within the building.
She is? She hasn't been seen for years, are you sure?
I have a good source, and I believe what they say. If they are to be believed, she may or she is going to be found in one of the sub-basements of this building.
And, yeah, I mean, with that, she actually looks quite pale and confused. Mr. Randall, I'm not normally permitted access to the sub-basements. Are you certain? I don't know quite what to make of this. Are you saying that she's a prisoner down there?
I don't know exactly what her situation is. I would make sure that your team goes and investigates that area of the building.
This doesn't make any sense. Why would Mr. Meadham task me to hire someone to track down his daughter if she were down in the basement the whole time? This doesn't make any sense.
I can't exactly explain why.
Yes, I mean, this would be an opportunity, actually, for another psychology role.
Yep, absolutely. I bet I don't roll as well as last time, I bet you that. Let's see. I roll a 41, which is actually, with me, still a pass.
Excellent. So, yeah, you can tell that Mrs. Parville... Yeah, I mean, she is not only surprised by this information, but it's not that she's disbelieving what you're saying, but it's like some pieces are fitting together in her head, and she doesn't like the answers that they're producing. She looks really quite upset by what you're telling her.
Miss Parville, may I ask... What is it that's coming to mind to you right now?
Ah, and this will be a good chance for you to follow up with a persuade roll.
Fantastic. So, okay. Let's see. Bam! Straight in the kisser with a 7.
Oh, But what's your persuade?
My persuasion is 70, so that's a critical success.
And at this point, she drops her voice and she puts a hand on the back of yours and says, Mr. Randall, I'm frightened. I mean, you've been around Cadiz's for long enough to know that things are not what they seem here, but there are wheels within wheels, there are secrets within secrets. Even as Mr. Meadham's private secretary, I thought I was privy to all the secrets, but every now and then something else comes out, and I'm worried. I'm worried, Mr. Randall. I don't think these are good people. And shall we leave it there for this session?
That's fantastic.
I think that's a fair statement.
Brilliant. And again, thank you everyone for listening. My name is Joe Trier. You can contact me on Twitter at HWR Podcast. You can find all of us on the Discord. There should be links like the show notes. You can find us on the Facebook page. We do actually have a Reddit page, again, if that's your thing. And you can contact me, I guess, the podcast on a business inquiries at highworldpodcast@gmail.com. Curran, last week or last episode, you mentioned that you might even have a film out at this point. Is there anything you want to talk about there? How can people get in contact with you? Anything else you'd like to share?
Thanks, Joe. So if anyone wants to get in contact with me, they can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Curran_lines. That's K-U-R-A-N K-U-R-A-N-S. The film is called Unstuffed. It's a short film, and I'll be applying to festivals and stuff, but a lot of the promotional stuff like posters and behind the scenes and stuff like that will be available. So look out for that, and I'll make sure that there's the relevant social media links.
Amazing. And we'll definitely share all of that as soon as you hand it over. Fantastic. Aaron, anything you'd like to share? How can people get in contact with you? Are you streaming right now? Is there anything to share about that?
No, not currently streaming, but never fear, you can still get a hold of me at Grunty Baby UK on the Twitters. You can also head over to the How We Roll Discord and ping me on there, and no doubt I will endeavour to respond should you do so.
Fantastic. And Dave, our Discord king, how can people get in touch with you? Anything you'd like to recommend on the Discord? Any particular rooms you've been hanging out?
I tend to hang around the DIY, the miniature painting and things like that, and Screaming in the Void. But also check Rolling with Fan Questions regularly, and you can always just at Dave me if you want me to see some.
Awesome. And Camille, how can people get in contact with you? Anything you'd like to share or talk about?
Hello. Well, you can find me also on another horror podcast, Demipia. Is the main podcast I've been on, and if you want to follow me on Twitter, not that I update very often, but it's at Camille Brouard, which I know is a ridiculous thing to try and spell, so I'm sure you can find it in the show notes.
Definitely hand all that over to me and I can update all that. Brilliant. Well, thank you for coming on. And Scott, again, what a fantastic episode. All these kind of interweaving. I love the phrase wheels within wheels. I think there's a lot going on, which I'm very excited to see how it turns out. How can people get in contact with you and find more of your stuff?
Well, thank you, Joe. Yes, the best place to find out about me and the other stuff I do is blasphemoustomes.com, which is the home of the Good Friends of Jackson Elias podcast, which I do with my good friends Matt Sanderson and Paul Fricker. And you can find links to all our various projects and social media presences and stuff like that there. Alternatively, I do turn up every now and then on the How We Roll Discord server, so see you there.
Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you've enjoyed our show. If you'd like to hear more of what we do, then you can find our Call of Cthulhu one-shots, as well as our Dungeons & Dragons Curse of Strahd campaign on iTunes, Spotify, and, well, wherever you can find podcasts. Next week, we will be returning to Curse of Strahd Season 4, fingers crossed, and then the next Two-Headed Serpent episode will be out in 2 weeks. But if you can't wait that long, then you can find the next episodes and much, much more at patreon.com/howwerollpodcast. And for $5, you get early access to everything, including some really cool content, which is exclusive to our Patreons. So definitely check that out. Before we go, I want to say a huge thank you to all our patrons, including our newest supporters, William Schultz, Bjorn Oren, Marco Marajek, I'm really sorry if I get this wrong, Marajamakai, Dave Manley, David Sansom, Patrick GP, Duncan Rhodes, Chris Wren, Austin Tyra, Tom Erickson, and Kristen Ziegler. Thank you all so much. It means the world to us that you support us, and it really helps us keep going and keep releasing every week. Before we go, we also want to say a huge thank you to BattleBards, who have provided many of the sound effects and music that you've heard on the show, and we highly recommend checking them out at battlebards.com. Lastly, our partners at Idle Champs of the Forgotten Realms have a gold chest code for How We Roll listeners. All you need to do is log into the game and enter this code, DIXYHAIRBLOG. That's Dixie Hair Blog. Thank you again for listening, and we will see you next week.